This really is a fact. The divine identity of the soul of being cannot be split into myriad pieces. It cannot be split into souls. And that's why Mrs. Eddy said that soul was such a term that was misused, and therefore she chose not to use it too much, because she was afraid that if she said my soul, even though she would maybe have liked to have said it, that people would misunderstand and think that she had a soul apart from the divine soul, when in reality there's only one soul, infinitely individualized, and cannot be fragmented in any way. So therefore the divine identity, that soul of being, can't be split into a myriad pieces, into souls, each to be sustained independently of the other. The divine sustains them all as one and gives unto them all they need for life. Hence, I must take care to be open to the impartial gift of life that is forever coming to me from the divine soul. I must allow it to generate within me and to energize my identity on every level of appearance. And though it may for a time appear that I'm sustained by, I have here, foods of lesser energy, I must not lose sight of the true source of my supply or lose touch with the immortality of my identity when found indivisibly united with the one eternal soul. Isn't that incredible? It's just wonderful. You can just feel it just pour. There, in the most effortless manner, I will find myself, my identity, eternally energized, fed by the abundant soul of being. Everybody's looking for the fountain of youth. Here it is. Here it is. This is it. It's the life of soul. It's so simple. There, I will not be tempted to look elsewhere for my support, even unto my own private efforts, but will realize that in my unity with soul, I will appear to carry out the same functions as it does, and will thereby give unto myself and every other facet of the one identity the food of life, the energy which generates its image and defines its nature. You can just see an indivisible soul there. And since it's an indivisible soul, then every facet of that soul, if it is energized, must be reflecting, by virtue of its spirit capabilities, that energy. So therefore, not only is the divine supplying my energy, but I am supplying the energy to every other facet of that soul, and it is supplying energy to every other facet, including my facet. You hear just a hint there of the law of universal reflection, but it is going on within the indivisibility of the life of soul, the indivisibility of the soul of being. So as a part of it is energized, everything is energized. Everything is given life. Everything is given nowness and newness, and cannot fall heir to entropy, to death. There cannot be no death of the body. It's a deathless identity that I have, not a body that can cycle and recycle into birth and death and birth and death and birth and death. No, a deathless identity, not caught in time, free of time, energized now, instantaneous. Isn't that magnificent? You don't have to process. You don't have to go cook dinner and eat a lot of food, right? You're just there, sustained from the life of soul, and it mercifully does this. I think it's fantastic. Which brings us to the sixth position, which says, through understanding that sin and sickness are healed by uncovering, rebuking, and relinquishing error. And so I ask, am I energized enough to awaken from the dream, from the vain imaginings that have kept me from the recognition of my divine selfhood? The hood is important here. Can I walk through the temple gates into the inner court, there to realize the calculus of my identity, to embody it until I am metamorphosized, the psyche transfigured into soul? Can I thus move into the center of the temple, into the Holy of Holies, that wonderful biblical symbol, past the collective poles of east and west, north and south, male and female, positive and negative, past the barriers of race, color, creed, national origin or generation, where I can touch into the wholeness of my true identity, my true selfhood? Can I, in this way, be conscious of what I am? That's a question that is almost feels so far removed from us, but is something that we really have to think about. And it's a wonderful place to be. And as that soul is energizing us, as it is echoing what it is to us, through us, as us, for us, can I be energized enough to waken from that dream? I hope so. I pray so. I want to be roused from my sleep, from the fitful wanderings of my psyche. Right? You want to be awakened from the body going to sleep, from the psyche wandering around aimlessly. I want to be free of the distortions of my own creating, free of sin, sickness, and death. I desire to find my spiritual center, that I may relinquish the nightmares and their hold on me. You know, that's what we're living out all the time, right? I want to relinquish that. I long to be released from this self-imposed trance. See, if you're mesmerized enough by animal magnetism, you just fall into a trance. That's Adam in the deep sleep, right? The sin established before my birth. The guilt that has been carried ever since. You know, she says the sin, well, the belief of sin, the belief of missing the mark, the belief of this distortion went on before it materialized. Goes on in the psyche before it materialized. So that's where it has to be handled, and that's where we are now. So you've already, in a sense, made the physical resurrection when you go through life. But now in here, it's the resurrection of all of it, the resurrection of the psyche. Only the soul of being can rouse me, I have, from the psyche. It alone can free me from the wandering in the abyss of distortions, condemned to ultimate despair. Only that divine soul can release me from the subjective sensing of latent error. That's what we were doing. That's what was happening long before it became a physical man, so to speak. And the sickness that it engenders. You want to handle sickness? Try handling it from the truth of soul. You'll handle it very quickly. For that soul has the power to awaken dormant understanding, to rekindle its spiritual sense, and revive the recognition of its true selfhood. Let it then accomplish its task. Let it bring the ideal of its selfhood into expression, dissolving any barrier that would appear to hide or divide it. Let it vanquish the latent claim of sin, thereby its products, guilt and penalty. And let it remove once and for all the false polarized motions, right? The emotions that would assert themselves and drug the collective body into sleep. See, it's the atom is one man. See, there's only one soul. So if the object went to sleep, Adam went to sleep. You know, it got drugged, right? It's the whole collective body that got drugged. It doesn't need to be that way, though. It can all awaken. So in this place value, it's the collective, the latent error in the collective that's being handled, not just my own personal so-called resurrection, but the resurrection of the collective body that's happening. And so in a translated form I have here, the peoples of the earth can be awakened. They can be healed of their problems and freed from the shackles that seem to bind them. But first, all must consider themselves one family of man. I didn't say it here, but in reality, they have to be conscious of the fact that there's only one soul, that there aren't a whole bunch of different souls which then objectify into a whole bunch of different bodies, that there's only one soul. And if they understood that, it would be so simple. We all have to understand ourselves to be one collective body I have here, and must realize that whatever seems to occur to one nation, city, or person occurs in some way to all. Well, it would have to be so. There's only one indivisible soul. So whatever appears to happen to a facet of it happens in essence to the whole body. It's really quite simple. That what affects a part affects the whole of the health of our collective body, our world. And that what would heal a part heals the whole. What destroys a part would in effect destroy the whole. Soul is establishing its heavenly kingdom here on earth. Can we not help by being conscious of the true, indivisible, undivided nature of that kingdom? For it will appear, despite all opposition, and willingly or unwillingly, we, the peoples of earth, will eventually uncover, rebuke, and relinquish the error that has kept us at odds, has kept us divided by our own false, limited identifications. It's so simple. We are one soul. We belong to a collective calculus of soul. And if everyone understood that, there could be no enmity. There wouldn't be any enmity, because who would sacrifice, you know, the foot to help the hand? I mean, it's all one body after all. Therefore, as it establishes its kingdom here on earth, we too must appear as an undivided whole, a concordant, cooperative, contributing, collective body. So you see, I'm being called upon to resurrect not only my individual sense of body, but my collective sense of body. Which brings us to the seventh and last place value, which all of you can obviously see is the universal body. Okay? So it says here then, through the realization of spiritual sense and the fulfillment of being's requirements, we appear in its perfect image. So I have to ask, it's a gentle question this time though, as I awaken, will I be able to foresee my celestial selfhood? Will I foresee how radiant and effulgent I can be, how much like a star I may appear? And as I move through the temple walls, see, they have no substance anymore. As I move through the temple walls to the innermost sanctuary, what will I find there, if not the crystal transparency of my own identity, united with its subjective creator, the soul of its being, in a grand preordained universal design? Would I not do all that is required to reach this point? So you can see, whereas in the soul of truth, we were resurrecting our collective sense of body, here we're being reunited at last with soul itself. We're finding our divine place in the holograph of soul. So I have here. I hope so, for I long to feel comforted in the embrace of that soul. You can just feel the love of soul there. To feel my identity so united with it, so integrated in it, that not a need is left to be fulfilled. I long to feel at last in place, to sense the holographic unity of my identity and that of the divine. I want to feel unified with every facet of it, to sense my connection with every part of its universe. I want once again to experience the glory and fulfillment of being integrated into the soul of being. You can just hear there that it handles the claim that I'm a lonely, isolated soul out on a planet Earth. It's just fantastic because it says, no, I've never let you go. You're always in my embrace. You're always self-contained within me. I have always identified you, and you're always in your rightful place, and you're always glorifying. You're always doing what I've said that you have to do, always. To that end, the perfection of soul is just flooding my being. It's impelling me toward this ultimate goal, and never for a moment has it lost touch with me or any other facet of its remarkable identity. It's wonderful to know that it's never lost sight of me. I may have lost sight of it, but it's never lost sight of me. From its comprehensive point of view and superior transpositional capabilities, it has always felt itself to be fulfilled, fully objectified. It feels itself to be objectified. It has always and will always bring its all-encompassing selfhood into expression. May I ever sense my inclusion in this expression. Yes, that's the only thing that is left now, is to be so embraced. I can, for I truly belong there. The crown can be placed upon my head. I can see the last picture in Christ and Christmas. You know, of the way. That's the transformation there, the resurrection, the way. And the crown can be placed upon my head. I can drop off layer after layer of limitation until only that crystal transparency of my identity remains. I can find my holographic position within the soul of being. I can zero in on the specific place value. In other words, my sensing can be so acute that I'm not just part of the collective body of soul, but I know my exact place within that collective body. Therefore, I can fulfill my preordained mission, and no fear of the unknown, no fear of change can prevent me from doing that. For I have you, that I'm being gently nurtured into a position of selflessness. You can just feel the soul of love just always fulfilling its own plan there, the plan of its identity to objectify itself. And never for an instant was there ever a question that it wouldn't do that, because it is doing that, always. And therefore, that which I am is being gently nurtured into a position of selflessness, continually ministered unto by the divine soul. That soul holds the keys to my identity in its being, to its purpose and fulfillment, and will not withhold them from me. I don't know of anyone that doesn't want to know the purpose of their identity, the purpose of their being. So I have here, to soul, I am an angel. It's a symbol, but it's a pretty good one at this point. To soul, I am an angel singing in the glorious angelic choir of its being. You can just feel the whole collective facetry, the whole collective body of angels, but not just being there, singing, creating this incredible sound, this incredible symphony, each singing its own part. And that soul has programmed every note and predetermined the perfection of every tone that I sing. And that every other facet of the holographic soul is singing. Each so-called angel or facet of that soul is singing its part and thereby fulfilling its purpose. And all together, they sound the music of the soul of being. They glorify the divine, infinite soul of being. Isn't that an incredible journey? Knowing that that glory awaits one at the end of the journey must give one the vision and the foresight and the courage to take that journey. Knowing the freedom that I will experience when I find at last the purpose of my own identity, the fulfillment that I will feel when united in that holographic soul, has to give me the impetus to embark on the journey. And I just hear that each of us have only to remember really simple things. And almost the most important one, to be quiet, to be still, to find the quiet sanctuary of our true being, of our true identity. I hear, first, it's not that we're in three parts, but it's a way that we transform and translate. It's a way that we can identify who we are. It's as if first I must quiet my mind, silence mortal mind, and allow the divine mind to give its images unto me, to create within me its pictures, its images, its information, its intelligence. And when I only have divine ideas, when I can really imbibe those divine ideas, then it's as if I intuitively move into spirit, and it says to me, quiet the heart, quiet your false affections, and just focus on those magnificent divine qualities of your being. And focus on them to the point that there's only a glorious reflection going on, where you're not outside anymore, where there's no material kingdom. And when you've reached that point, it says, all right, now go deeper yet. Embark on the journey of soul. Quiet your soul. And I can say that now because you know I don't mean a private soul. I mean to quiet the belief of having a private soul. But I must quiet that sensing so that then I can make this wonderful journey into the promised land. I can be re-identified by soul, thereby operating as it operates, thereby being energized by that soul, being sustained and maintained by that soul, individually, collectively, universally, to move so through that soul, so through those gates, that only the consciousness of soul remains with me. Only the calculus of soul defines my identity and defines it so perfectly, so magnificently, that it directs me to my specific place within the holograph of soul, where I can and do glorify the divine being with my objectification, with my angelic being, singing as it would have me sing, the symphony of its creating.